Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So if you're a recent graduate who's looking for your first job, have you been surprised by how much personal information you're expected to provide prospective employers? Resumes, references, proof of immigration status, credit checks, maybe even drug tests, just some of what they want to see. And now beyond all that, there was a recent Washington Post article that said more and more employers want to plumb the depths of your psyche and find out what makes you tick and therefore what kind of employee you will make through personality tests. So are these tests an invasion of privacy, a waste of time, or a valuable tool that can take away some of the subjectivity and bias in the hiring process? Joining me to talk about the use of personality tests and what they promise or threaten are Ben Dattner, a business consultant and teacher at NYU, and Robert Hogan, president of Hogan Assessments, a company that develops some of these tests. He's also the editor of Personality Psychology in the Office. Welcome, both of you, to WNYC. Good morning.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Morning, and thanks for having me on.
Ben Dattner, do you want to give us a little overview and talk about what some of the main types of personality tests are?
Sure. Basic kinds of tests are cognitive ability or intelligence tests, which are like the traditional IQ type test or the SAT, the kinds of tests that from the age of 7 all of us have to suffer through. The other kinds are personality and attribute or style or preference tests. So, for example, are you extroverted or introverted? How conscientious are you likely to be? How agreeable are you likely to be in a wide range of situations?
So, Robert, give us an example. You've developed tests. What does an employer know about an applicant who's taken one of your tests? And maybe you can give us some examples.
Well, they need to know really three things. The first thing they need to know is the person fundamentally employable? There are some people who are not in the workforce, and there's a reason for that. The second thing they need to know is the person a good match for the specific job. Recruiters are under pressure to find long-distance truck drivers. Recruiters are extroverts. Recruiters like extroverts. They recruit extroverts into the job, a long-distance truck driver, and that's a disaster. So you need to have a fit between the person and the job. And then the third thing is that you got a person on board who's pretty good. Everyone can improve their game. You can use these tests to develop coaching programs for people.
Once they're already employed. Well, let me go back to your first criteria, or the first question the employer wants to determine an answer for. Is this person fundamentally employable? Are you saying that somebody could come into my office, I could interview her, think, this person seems like a good candidate for the job, when really deep down they're fundamentally unemployable?
Right, and there are sort of three dimensions of employability. The first one, it has to do with just basic integrity. Are they going to steal, lie, do drugs, come to work drunk?
You can tell that from a personality test?
Oh, you betcha. And the second thing you want to know is, can they provide customer service? There's hardly a job left anymore that doesn't have some customer service component to it. And then the third thing is, are they able to stand up to the normal stresses of job, or are they, stress prone and fall apart?
So give me an example of how a personality test might indicate if somebody's going to steal or is a drug addict. Presumably, if you ask them, are you going to steal and are you addicted to drugs, if they do intend any of these things, they're going to lie and say no.
Yeah, there is a distinction between what sort of overt and more subtle tests. The overt tests basically look like lie detector questions. Just how much money did you steal from your last employer? We think that's sort of naive. Really, you're more interested in kind of risk taking, attitudes toward authority, willingness to test the limits, and we try to get at it in a more subtle underlying way.
Ben, you want to add some context there?
Yeah, my clients usually retain me less to sort of screen out drug addicts and criminals, and more to sort of look between different candidates, all of whom seem qualified for the position, but which one is likely to be a better fit for the organization when his or her personality is a better match for the position. So what I do, rather than substituting for things like background checks or employment reference checking, what I do is administer a battery of tests, including, I'm pleased to say, Dr. Hogan's, which is one of the top ones on the market, to look at how closely are their attributes and preferences likely to fit the demands of the role.
All right. So to give people a little bit of context, we're going to try a little experiment, and we need a guinea pig, you brave listeners. If you're interested in trying a 6-question sequence from one sample test, call in and tell our screener what you do for a living or if you're looking for a job, and we'll have you answer six true or false questions, and then Mr. Hogan will take a stab at assessing your work personality from those answers, realizing the limitations of it in this context. So call us at 212-433-WNYC if you're willing to participate in this on behalf of all your fellow listeners, 212-433-9692. And Mr. Hogan, you test for what you call the bright side, the dark side, and the inside. What do those mean?
Well, the bright side is what you see when people are at their best, which is typically what you see in an employment interview or on a first date. The dark side is what people are like when they let down their guard, when they don't care anymore. That's sort of the person you see when they come to work or the person you see after you've married them. And then the inside has to do with core values.
That's a very dim view of marriage, but go ahead.
The inside has to do with core values, and which are not the same thing as personality. They're what Ms. Statner calls preferences.
All right. I think, should I use the caller on line one? Screen? Yes? Okay. We're gonna try this little experiment here with Carpio in Brooklyn. Carpio, hi.
Hello, Brian.
So, Mr. Hogan, what do you want to do?
Six questions. First of all, just say true or false. Before an important meeting, I think carefully about what I will say.
True.
Okay. Most people think I'm pretty laid back.
False.
When I was little, people thought I was cute.
True.
When I'm annoyed, I let people know.
Well, how can you answer true or false on it? I mean, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't.
Okay, then we'll just call it uncertain. And then rules are made to be broken.
False.
And finally, I like foreign movies.
True.
Yeah. Well, based on this very quick scan, I would say you're a rather energetic, outgoing, adventurous person, and you probably do really well in sales.
So, Carpio, tell our guest what you actually do.
I work in catering. I work as a waiter and for catered events, big, huge parties. And
yep.
I am good at sales, though.
Yourself.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back over the list and see how you learn those things. Before an important meeting was question one, I think carefully about what I will say. What are you measuring there?
That's actually a fundamental part of our sales battery. People who are not very good at sales say no. They just go in and wing it, whereas thoughtful sales guys think carefully about what they're going to say. It's very interesting.
All right.
The second question was when most people think I'm pretty laid back. That's an ambition item, and you need a lot of ambition to be in sales, and he nailed that one. The third one is about exhibitionism. When I was little, people thought I was cute. He said, yep, that's absolutely fundamental part of sales. They've got to think that people find them fascinating. The fourth question.
People didn't think they were cute when they were little is in big trouble in life, I think.
Well, they're not going to do real well in sales or politics.
That really goes to exhibitionism?
Yep.
Well, you call it sociability.
Yep. This is off the exhibitionistic part of the sociability scale, and it's crucial for careers in public service, you know, politics, sales.
You can't have a cute, shy kid? I mean, no, seriously.
That's what I was when I was a kid.
You think you were cute and shy?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're questioning whether that question, Carpio, tests.
It's fascinating that they would draw so much info from one question, really.
It's all the information I have.
Carpio, thank you for doing this. I'll tell you what, let's run it through with another caller. we didn't give away all the secrets of what these are supposed to test. Janet in Brooklyn, want to give it a try?
Of course.
Okay, so it's the same questions. Mr. Hogan, you want to go over them again?
Sure. Before an important meeting, I think carefully about what I'll say.
Yes.
Most people think I'm pretty laid back.
No.
When I was little, people thought I was cute.
No.
No.
When I'm annoyed, I let people know.
It depends.
Rules are made to be broken.
Yes.
And finally, I like foreign movies.
Yes.
Okay. So similar to Carpio, except on a few possibly
big
ones.
Yeah, except she's not as exhibitionistic.
Now, when you say people didn't think you were cute when you were little, Janet, what, I mean, they didn't?
I don't have any recollection, and I come from a somewhat of an authoritarian background. That is, they don't tell children that they're cute, and if you misbehave, you're definitely not cute.
And yet you came out of that background answering true to rules are made to be broken.
Yes, because I see rules are made to set limits, but there are always exceptions to the rules, and you have to know when they are to be broken. And that's the critical thing. When should a rule be broken?
All right, Mr. Hogan. What does Janet from Brooklyn do for a living?
She's a creative person who has high aspirations and who mostly needs to work on her she needs public speaking training.
She needs public speaking training.
Yeah, she needs to work on her public performance.
Janet's laughing. I know what she does because she told the screener. And Janet, the answer is,
I'm a librarian.
You're a very creative one.
And I do a lot of communicating.
Yeah, and people would really like coming to your library.
Why is that?
Because she's a nice lady.
The little ones do, because I love them to death. The older ones need a bit more structure, and they don't love me to death.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for your
Thank
call.
Thank you.
Ben Dattner, you want to get in on one of the interpreting one of these questions? When I am annoyed, I let people know. And both our respondents answered sometimes, or it depends.
Right. Well, that could have something to do with candor, right? And so when I help my clients decide what kind of person do we need in this role, what are the political demands of the person in the role, even sort of thinking about do we need someone candid or not helps the organization consider, is this a tough role? Does it span boundaries? Are there competing pressures, et cetera? So what I like to say is even by the time you get to assess individual personality, you've had to do a lot of upfront work as far as assessing the organizational culture and the team dynamic.
And Mr. Hogan, I guess since you were testing in theory with these questions for a sales job, when I am annoyed, I let people know, is the answer to that ideally no, because you have to stay on message when you're a salesperson and stay positive?
No, the answer is it all depends.
That's the answer you were looking for, was it depends.
Yeah, both of those people, this is a dimension that we call agreeableness or likability, and I would say both of your listeners would probably have average scores on that. If it's a custom service job or a relationship sales job, you need high scores on that. But if it's a cold call work or work where you have to give people a lot of negative feedback, then you want low scores.
All right. This is WNYC 93.9 and AM 820 and WNYC.org. We're talking about the growing use of personality tests on job applicants with Robert Hogan, who's been doing most of the sample testing here, president of Hogan Assessments, a company that develops some of these tests, and the editor of the book Personality Psychology in the Office, and Ben Dattner, a business consultant who does consult employers who use these tests. He also teaches at NYU. And now that we've given you a pretty good idea through a few of you brave guinea pigs about what these tests are, we'll talk about some of the controversies surrounding them when we continue in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we talk about the increasing use of personality tests in the job application process with Ben Dattner, business consultant and teacher at NYU, and Robert Hogan, president of Hogan Assessments, which develops some of these tests. And now we're going to open up the phones for anybody who wants to talk about your experiences or ask a question from either side of the aisle here. If you're an employer who has used personality tests, We'd love to hear from you. Have they worked for you in identifying the employees that you want to have? Have they not worked for you? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or email brianlehrershow@wnyc.org, as well as applicants, former applicants, employees who've been through this. What was this like for you, and what does it mean? Ben, can you cheat at a personality test? Say you're applying to be a customer service rep. Probably wouldn't be too hard to figure out how to answer the questions in such a way to appear to really like people, would it?
Absolutely. But one thing that I always advise my clients when they express concerns about people cheating on self-report tests is, first of all, to say you're going to do a lot of other stuff as part of the process, which is you're going to have them give a prospective sales pitch. You're going to do reference checking. You're going to ask them behavioral interview questions, et cetera. But even the ability to fake on a personality test indicates a certain kind of social intelligence that might actually be valuable if not used for nefarious purposes.
Viewed darkly, you could say that maybe along with the thieves and psychopaths, they're weeding out future unionizers, union organizers, or maybe a person who would be capable of standing up to a corrupt culture like at Enron.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes what you have to do when you're advising clients is they might be tempted to hire one kind of person, and there's a well-known dynamic in industrial and organizational psychology called ASA, attraction, selection, attrition, which is this idea that organizations become more homogeneous over time through what's known as homosocial reproduction, which sounds obscene but actually is not, which is the tendency of people to hire others who are like them, either in terms of demographic similarity or perceived personality similarity. So you don't want everybody to be the same.
And so I read in that Washington Post article that there are In theory, these are used to reduce bias and subjectivity on the part of the employer. But there are also some people who have concerns that these tests can increase bias or subjectivity or cause new forms of bias, either because cognitive tests measure certain things that maybe people who come from socioeconomically disadvantaged backgrounds may not do as well on, or even in terms of just test taking may disadvantage people who have disabilities. There's some concern this may even run afoul of the Americans with Disabilities Act. What do you think about that?
That's right. Well, you've asked a bunch of questions. I mean, thinking about the disability issue, one thing you don't want to do is use psychological testing in order to determine whether somebody has some sort of mental illness. You have to be very careful not to administer tests like the MMPI, the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, which in that Washington Post article they mentioned had been used by Rent-A-Center Corporation, and people filed a claim against that corporation for inappropriate use of a privacy-invading test.
Let's take a phone call. Jerry in the Bronx. Hi, Jerry. You're on WNYC.
Hi. I have a comment for you.
Uh-huh.
I practiced label law for over 20 years in California, and a couple of legal points would be, one, that in California, the psychological tests have been held by the courts to be an invasion of privacy. Number two, that around the United States, various federal courts have held that they have an impact on three categories of folks, older folks, blacks, and women, that tends to weed them out, and therefore the tests have been held unlawful. My fearless prediction is that they probably have a half-life of 7 to 10 years in the United States.
You mean they're popular now and they're going to fade away?
They're going to fade away because of the courts. They're fundamentally unlawful. They're essentially the great quest for the perfect employee, but as you can tell from the answers from your listeners, they're more like palm reading than they are.
But these are not new. They've been around for a while. For a long time, companies have been using some kind of aptitude test to hire for sales and whatever. Ben, what's new that we're talking about this today?
Well, actually, I would actually disagree, because if you look at data from the Association for Test Publishers, the use of psychological testing has actually been growing over the last several years for at around 15% per year. I think the concerns you raise are very important ones, but if employers consult with industrial and organizational psychologists, as well as with labor attorneys like yourself, I believe they can design selection batteries that actually have less bias than unstructured interviews, for example.
So, Robert Hogan, since you do design these tests for your company, how do you try to stay within the bounds of the law? And assuming you're not in the business of aiding and abetting employer discrimination against dark people and old people, how do you get around, how do you design tests so that they don't communicate this bias?
Well, first of all, most of the legal sanctions around this test development are basically best practices, and I've fully and thoroughly endorse it. I think that, you know, the problem we have is that there are 2,500 test publishers in the United States and only about five of them are legitimate. So you got real problems with these, with 2,495 people. And the way you do it is, our tests are absolutely colorblind, age blind, ethnicity blind. Women get the same scores as men, blacks get the same scores as whites, Hispanics, Orientals all get the same kind of scores, and older people actually get better scores than younger people. And the tests predict performance, so all the legal bases are covered.
Jerry, any last comeback to that, you think?
Absolutely. If 5 out of 2,500, I stand with my prediction that you've got a 7 to 10 year half-life for these tests. Basically, it's an admission that the tests are hocus-pocus in over 95% of the cases. It doesn't take that long for legislatures to catch up with courts. Right now, the courts are dealing with it. No one would suggest that the United States courts are packed with liberals. And after the courts eventually catch up, Congress and the states catch up and pass their own laws. But I think those numbers validate my prediction.
Jerry, thank you for your call. We're talking about the increasing use of personality testing in the workplace with Robert Hogan, president of Hogan Assessments, which develops some of these tests, and Ben Dattner, a business consultant and teacher at NYU. Mr. Hogan, you wanted to say something there?
Yes, the group, the overall kind of lobbying group for the test publishers is called the Association of Test Publishers, and I tell them repeatedly that unless they put some standards in place to regulate this industry, which is an unregulated industry, if they don't do it, sooner or later the feds will. So I think your caller was exactly right.
Kay in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Kay.
Hey there.
So
how are you?
Good. What's up?
I was just calling in to give a comment, and that was I was the director of recruitment for a major national company that did personality testing. And we spent literally hundreds of thousands of dollars to gentlemen just like the guys on the show. And when I did a study that looked at performance over the course of 5 years, we found zero correlation between performance, which was measured by promotion, pay increases, tenure with the company, and the personality test. And my question is, you know, they state a lot of things like our tests are, you know, not biased. Our tests are, you know, predict future performance. And my question is, what is the size of the population of testing that they've done, and how do they ongoingly validate their test results?
Ben Dattner?
Well, first of all, your organization is to be commended for even doing that kind of research. There's actually an article in this month, the June issue of HR Magazine, which you can see at shrm.org,
right,
about how very uncommon it is for employers to validate any sort of selection methodology. So you guys were ahead of the curve in doing that. What I would say is that these tests are hypotheses which are meant to be tested. The hypothesis is this test, used in conjunction with other selection methodologies, together have better predictive value than do any of those predictors independently.
Okay. I would make one final comment.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about testing, but we do very stringent interviewing, and what we found was our interviewing was about 50% accurate in predicting performance. So it was kind of, we could throw darts at a dartboard and do about as well as we did with performance on salespeople.
Well, actually, research has shown that 50% is a pretty good estimate as far as structured behavioral interviews. If you have the kind of informal, unstructured, shooting from the hip kind of interviews that people usually do, the validity is much lower. Did you look at how valid the interviews were when used in conjunction with the personality testing that you did?
I didn't, and the reason was I didn't feel the managers were. We did behavioral interviewing and had questions that they were required to use, but I didn't feel it was valid because the managers were salespeople who were kind of do their own thing kind of people. And so I don't think they were actually using the behavioral interviewing that we trained them on.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for your call. Interesting. Now, here's somebody in job hunting mode currently who's calling anonymously from Jersey City. Hello, Anonymous.
Yes, hello. A great show, as usual. I've been listening for show for about 10 years, and first time I'm calling.
Thank you.
You're probably the best show on the dial.
Thank you so much.
I feel
but
I'm
you
in
know,
marketing.
If you get hooked on this show at this time of day, it's harder to leave and join the workforce. So, you know,
I'm
counseling.
I'm working and talking at the same time, so I'm able to continue my work.
Good.
I am in process switching positions. I am in B2B sales and strategic marketing for quite a few years. Lately, I've been through about 15 to 20 of these kind of tests differently. I think most of these tests are so easy to cheat. Sometimes I feel like are they really testing me, or am I the person testing them? How good is their test? It is absolutely easy to cheat them. I absolutely agree with your previous caller, and except for a few ones like Caliper and the Barnett assessment, certain companies, I feel all of them were just a joke. And some of these were my criteria, even before I get to meet a person and a face-to-face interview opportunity. And I felt this was totally something wrong on the company's side. You know, they were not able to assess people correctly. I think it's people, not paper. When a hiring manager, be it a sales manager or a director or a VP, when they see the person in person, they are able to assess them much more accurately, even without help of these tests in conjunction with it.
Ben Dattner, I'll throw that back to you.
Well, there was a very interesting article by Malcolm Gladwell in The New Yorker a couple of years ago, which you can see at gladwell.com, about employment interviews and how people tend to make up their minds in the first half second of seeing someone else. And for the most part, judgments that you make in the first half second based on somebody's physical attractiveness or their appearance are shown by research to not be valid of subsequent job performance.
Half second.
Yep.
If I might just add a comment to this, I just feel that the tests should not be the ones that fill the pre-criteria before getting a face-to-face interview opportunity. They may give an inaccurate assessment of the person if they do know how to cheat well in the test.
Thank you very much. And it sounds like you're a very confident interviewee. I guess it's because you're coming from a position of strength since you have a job while you're looking to improve your position, but that you can feel that you're assessing the company as much as they're assessing you. Thank you for your call. And do you think, Mr. Hogan, that these tests can be used as a crutch by employers, that they then blame all the problems on personalities and not on the structures that maybe they put in place for defining jobs and incentives?
Well, that you're getting to the heart of the issue. I've been doing this for quite a while. I have yet to find an organization that really had a clear view of who their good employers were. That's the question I always ask them. Do you have any idea who your good employers are? They typically know who they like, but they very often don't know who's doing a good job for them.
That's right. Even doing the upfront work as far as defining performance, before you can say, okay, do these different criteria predict performance, what exactly is performance? A lot of organizations can't answer that question.
That's right.
And the tests can help make that more consistent?
Going through the exercise of defining what constitutes success in this given role and then trying to see what predicts that will get you to a place where you begin to have conversations about not just fitting round pegs into round holes, but how are our roles defined? What are the incentives? And for example, I have clients who have me assess candidates, and sometimes what they find is no matter what the attributes of the candidate are, he or she will not be successful in a role where their authority is unclear, where their boss is not attentive or responsive, or where the team is suffering from some sort of team dynamic at a higher level of analysis.
We have a few more minutes with Ben Dattner, who is just speaking, a business consultant and teacher at NYU, and Robert Hogan, president of Hogan Assessments, which develops personality tests for employers to use on job applicants, as we talk about the increasing use of personality testing in the job application process. And here, Robert, is an email from a listener who says, I've used these as team-building tools in large organizations versus as a hiring tool. It is a know thyself and then hopefully operate more effectively as a member of the team as a result of this self-awareness. Do you develop for that use too?
Absolutely. At the outset, I said there are three uses of the test: basic employability, fit with the job, and then self-development. And that's a big part of the whole business.
All right. John in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi there. As I understand, in Europe, they use handwriting analysis for personality testing. I don't know how widespread it is, where the prospective employee will give a handwritten essay, and the content of which is almost irrelevant as far as what they're writing. Is just they use that for the handwriting analysis to determine personality and likelihood for.
Ben Detner, are you familiar with that being actually
Yes,
used?
I am, and I also know that in Japan they use blood type.
So you're making a joke?
No, I'm serious. That different cultures have different ideas about what predicts human personality and what's likely to be relevant in the workplace.
Is handwriting analysis more serious than, you know, something for a carnival?
Well, people in Europe swear by it. I have a colleague here in New York, Arlen Imberman, who has made a very nice living helping organizations use personality. Handwriting analysis for that kind of purpose. So. Even though the research doesn't really support it, you know, face validity is certainly a kind of validity.
Astrology, palm reading?
Well, you know, it's funny. I think that if you used astrology for the purposes of selecting employees, as long as you didn't discriminate against members of a protected class, if you were choosing between two 40-year-old white men for a given position and you decided you wanted a Virgo instead of a Libra, I don't believe that the one who was not selected would have any basis for an employment claim.
And blood type? Are those with the universal donor type more giving in the workplace?
I don't know. You'd have to speak with somebody, a Japanese expert in that area.
Mr. Hogan, a couple of people wonder... Are the tests more popular now because you can't get a meaningful reference from prior employers anymore because they're all afraid of lawsuits?
I think your lawyer who called in was all over this. Everything. All these developments are being driven by lawyers. People get sued if they use cognitive tests. People get sued if they use inappropriate tests. I think the push is just coming from the lawyers to make test publishers do a better job and make employers do a better job selecting.
And Ben, you know, the New York Times ran a story recently on how employers are Googling candidates and finding their lewd postings on MySpace and stuff like that.
That's right. I think the more information employers can gather, the better, especially if these different sources of information are independent.
All right. Interesting stuff. And if you're an employer, good luck. If you're an employee, beware. Ben Detner, a business consultant, teacher at NYU. Robert Hogan, president of Hogan Assessments, a company that develops personality tests for the workplace. And editor of, is it a book or a periodical?
It's a book.
Personality Psychology in the Office is the title. Thanks both of you very much for coming on today. Really interesting.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up in a minute, Democracy Bronx Style, Borough President Adolfo Carrion shakes up the community board that opposed the new Yankee Stadium. Stay with us.